You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 15th of June, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sir Alan Shanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I thought we would have a look at an interview with Sir Lenny Henry, and it's a particularly interesting interview because he raises a couple of points which I've talked about before, and I thought maybe we could get into them again and into the details of them and the reasons for these observations that he is making. British actor Sir Lenny Henry has questioned the lack of diversity in audiences at British festivals, including Glastonbury, remarking that he is interested and always surprised by the apparent absence of black and Asian faces in the crowds. And of course, he's pointing this out because he's sort of implying that there may be some implicit racism there that is the reason for this, because apparently if there are any differences at all between racial groups, then it must be down to racism. But this is just something that goes on. I think it's just white people that are really interested in camping in a field for a weekend and going through all those hardships. It just seems to be that black and Asians are not really interested in doing that. I don't think it's that the festival goers are being racist in any way. There are festivals that concentrate on black and Asian music, such as WOMAD, the World of Music and Dance. But Glastonbury started out as a rock festival, and rock music has always traditionally been white. It was created by Europeans. It's a European style of music, and you can contrast that with something like reggae, which is a black style of music. And you can even look at the music itself. I mean, rock music, the accent is on the first beat and the third beat. And with reggae music, the accent is on the second beat and the fourth beat. And that's why reggae has a different feel to it. And just the music itself, the difference in musical styles shows that there are innate differences between races, between the people groups. The expression of music is completely different from each different people group. So you would expect people going to a rock festival to be white, and you would expect people going to, say, a reggae festival or a hip-hop festival to be black. And Lenny Henry finds this particularly interesting, that there is this lack of diversity at the festivals. And I find it interesting as well, because it just goes to prove that there are these innate differences between races. We are not all the same. The Comic Relief co-founder, who shot to fame as the first black performer on the controversial Black and White Minstrel Show, made the comments ahead of the release of his two-part documentary about Caribbean culture in Britain later this month. Of course, Caribbean culture would be things such as the carnival, and you have the Notting Hill Carnival, but it doesn't include camping. Camping and barbecuing as well, I think, is pretty much a unique European thing. Wanting to cook outdoors, wanting to live outdoors, caravanning. It's a European thing. It's a white thing. I think maybe this living outdoors, it appeals to the pioneer within the European spirit. Harkening back to the wagon days when we would be travelling in wagons across South Africa or across America, building civilizations there. And we have this yearning to go out and discover things and have a taste of adventure, be out in the great outdoors. And I think this is something that is part of the European spirit, and maybe not so much a part of black or Asian spirit. I mean, you don't really hear about the Chinese being into their camping or caravanning. It's a European thing. Of course, I guess why he's really sort of bringing this up here is maybe he's saying that we need to get more diversity involved in this. But why do we need to get more diversity involved in things like festivals? If black and Asian people are not really interested in going to them, why should we be encouraging it? As I say, you do get black and Asian musicians playing at these festivals. You just don't really get very many of them in the audience. Discussing diversity in places where different ethnic groups do not mix, Sir Lenny, 63, told the BBC's Clive Myrie in a Radio Times interview, "It's interesting to watch Glastonbury and look at the audience and not see any black people there. I'm always surprised by the lack of black and brown faces at festivals. I think, wow, that's still very much a dominant culture thing." I mean, why does he find it surprising? I mean, there are lots of instances where white people and black people have different interests. Winter sports is one. That's another place where you don't tend to see many black faces. Possibly because Europeans are more centred around the northern climates. Maybe they don't feel the cold so much, so they're more at home amongst the snow. But we do have a natural desire to wish to be with our own people group as well. If you look at schools, for instance, at lunch break or whatever breaks there are, and the children get a chance to sit with who they want to sit with and play with who they want to play with, they will normally segregate by race. It's the same in prisons at the other end of the scale. When you have a multicultural prison, the prisoners will hive off into racial groups. We just feel naturally more at home amongst our own people. And I think maybe that's a reason why you don't see so many black faces at these festivals. But I think you would see them there at say a big hip hop concert or a reggae concert. I guess one of the places where you do see both black and white faces would be sort of raves. I can remember back in the 90s, you would see black faces at raves, but you certainly wouldn't see very many of them at festivals. Born in Dudley in 1958 to Jamaican parents, Sir Lenny also addressed Myrie recently becoming the first black host of long-running BBC quiz show, Mastermind. "It's great to have David Olusoga on television talking about black British history that goes back to Hadrian's Wall. Somewhere the gatekeepers have changed because now we're allowed to have you on Mastermind. But how long did that take?" the former Tiswas presenter said. 2 points to bring up here. Black British history goes back to Hadrian's Wall? Well, not quite. There was reference to Africans at the time of Hadrian's Wall, but Africa at that time, North Africa, was Roman. It had been settled by the Carthaginians, who were white. They were a Phoenician group, of colonists that set out from Phoenicia, which was Lebanon, Syria, that sort of area, and they settled in North America and they built Carthage, and Carthage became known as the Punic civilization. And the Romans went to war against the Carthaginians and the Carthaginians lost, and that was known as the Punic Wars, and Rome took over North Africa. And after the Romans took over North Africa, the Vandals went there, the Germanic tribe, and they took over North Africa. And at no point was it sub-Saharan Africans there. It was always white people that were there. And then we come to Britain and we come to the Romans in Britain. And of course, Emperor Hadrian built Hadrian's Wall. And at that time, they had what is referred to as Africans over here. But they weren't sub-Saharan Africans. They were Roman Africans, and there were people from these Germanic tribes. We even have references to an African king coming over to Britain. But of course, that reference to an African king meant that he was a Vandal king that was in North Africa. It did not mean that he was black. But of course, with this drive to be inclusive and to try and include black people in British history, they've latched onto that. They've latched onto the fact that there is reference to Africa, and they've just assumed that that means that these people must be black just because North Africa has black people in it today. I mean, this really shows an example of migrations throughout history and migration patterns, and people have always moved about. And just because an area is black or non-white now does not mean that it was black or non-white 2,000 years ago. I mean, this is a blind spot that a lot of people today have, is our history, and particularly white history, and how we've actually been all around the world. We weren't just centered in Europe. I mean, even when you look at Turkey, which is now obviously part of Turkey, probably part of the Near East, Constantinople, which is now Istanbul, that used to be a part of Europe. Troy was in what is now Turkey. And you certainly wouldn't think of the Trojans as being non-white or being Turks or being black. So we have to be careful that we don't project the geography of today, or the demography in the geography of today, back in the geography of 1,000 years ago. So Lenny Henry is wrong with what he says here. And then he's questioning how long it took to get Clive Myrie on Mastermind. Well, surely if there had been a black presenter who was highly intelligent and he went for the job, I'm sure he would have been given the job. But there probably aren't that many black presenters that are highly intelligent that would actually be able to do Mastermind. And Clive Myrie was lucky that he was able to get this job. And I dare say part of the reason why he was given the job was so that the BBC could say, look, we have a black Mastermind presenter here. Look how diverse we are. Look how much we are supporting the diversity agenda. The former Tiswas presenter continued, we still want more representation because we deserve it. We are British citizens. We are colonials. We've been in this country. We have grown up in this country. We have contributed. And a lot of us feel it still isn't being reciprocated enough. That's also what this documentary is about. It's about the feeling of, well, come on, I fitted in. Now what? I've integrated. Now what happens? Well, what should happen is that you now start to create things, build things, do things for yourself. Use the resources that you now have access to as a British citizen to create things for yourself. And this is always the way that I end up feeling when we hear these complaints that, say, a piece of medical equipment hasn't been designed to work for black people and it only works for white people, and that there are complaints about it. And you end up thinking, well, why don't you design a piece of medical equipment that will work on black people? Why are you complaining that this other people group that invented this piece of medical equipment, why are you complaining that they didn't invent it for you? And here it's rather like saying, well, Lenny Henry, you get paid a lot of money. Why didn't you get together with some black entrepreneurs and set up your own television company and then buy a channel and set up a television channel for black people? I'm sure that would be very welcome. I'm sure they would get a lot of help with that. But instead, he's really sort of complaining that this all needs to be done for them rather than doing it for themselves. And I'm sure I can't be the only person to be thinking that. So Lenny's comments came after Glastonbury's co-organiser Emily Evis said Stormzy's 2019 headline performance was a little bit late, maybe, as the grime artist became the first black solo British headliner in the festival's history. And again, you have to go back to here, what is the festival's history? Well, the festival's history is as a rock festival. It's not as a grime festival, and Glastonbury has always had smaller stages, and they've always had a diverse selection of acts playing on the smaller stages, but it was primarily a rock festival. That's how it started. And the bands that they have on the main stage have always been rock bands. And you get world music playing on the other stages. You've got like a jazz stage and various other places where you would get to see a diverse range of acts. You would get to see non-white performers. But maybe not on the main stage, because it was a rock festival and people wanted to come and see a giant rock band. So that was the reason why Glastonbury didn't have a black solo British headliner up until that point. I don't think it was because Emily Eavis or Michael Eavis were just discriminating against people because they didn't like the colour of the skin or anything like that. In 2008, Glastonbury organisers were forced to defend their choice of rapper Jay-Z to headline that year's event after claims it had upset traditional rock fans and led to poor ticket sales. So there you have your answer there. What happens when you don't have a rock band headlining at a rock festival? Well, it leads to poor ticket sales. That was the reason for not bringing in a rapper before to headline the festival, is that it was a rock festival and rock fans don't really tend to be that into rap music. Some of them may be, but not enough to sell out a festival. It wasn't because the Glastonbury organisers were racist. Eva said the festival had to move with the times, and she blamed an innate conservatism in Britain for the negative reaction in some quarters. So this is her being a bit of a hypocrite there, isn't she? Because her audience is made up of rock fans, and they know what sort of music they like, and if she's going to try and force a different style of music on them, and they don't like that, and not enough of them buy ticket sales, she's then blaming the music fans for having an innate conservatism, when really it's just all about your choice of music. I mean, there are plenty of white people that listen to black music, but there really aren't that many black people that listen to white music, I don't think. Otherwise, you would see more of them making it, and you really don't see that many black guitarists, for instance. I mean, we got Jimi Hendrix, we got Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy, maybe Lenny Kravitz. I can't really think of any others. Most rock musicians are white, and she says it's here an innate conservatism, but most of the audience that go to Glastonbury are left-wing, and there is a big link between Glastonbury and the left-wing, and there were even Labour politicians that have been to Glastonbury on more than one occasion. It's a very left-wing, progressive festival, so it's very strange here that she accuses the Glastonbury goers as being innate conservatives. She said the row over her choice of a black American rapper rather than a rock band like Radiohead had raised uncomfortable questions over British attitudes to race and class. Why though? Surely it's just all about the music. It's not about what class somebody is. I mean, most of these rock bands, they would be quite insulted if they were told that they were upper class. And if you look at the punk movement, that was all about working class. And I don't think any of these music fans had look at the race of somebody. They're just interested in the music. I mean, a lot of the time now, when you're listening to music, you have no idea what the person that's actually making the music looks like, particularly with dance music. Maybe it raised some uncomfortable questions with her over this, but that's possibly because she's become so distanced between herself, or put a great distance between herself and the actual people that go to the festival. I think maybe she's over intellectualizing this, and because it is all about what sort of music you like, not about what race or class the musician is. She says there is an interesting undercurrent in the suggestion that a black US hip-hop artist shouldn't be playing in front of what many perceive to be a white middle-class audience. And she wrote this in the Independent newspaper at the time. But again, that wasn't why people weren't going. They didn't buy tickets because they weren't interested in seeing a black rapper, because they're into rock music, which is mainly made by white musicians. She says, I'm not sure what to call it, at least not in public, but this is something that caused me some disquiet. So what she's really sort of inferring there is that she'd like to call it racism, but then she would be insulting all the festival goers for being racist. And that's why it's causing her some disquiet. She says maybe what the critics have really revealed is something about attitudes that are still all too prevalent in Britain, an innate instinct to go back to base and play safe, an innate conservatism, a stifling reluctance to try something different. Well, why would you want to try something different when you go to a rock festival? People have saved up their money, they've taken a week's holiday off work, it's the highlight of their year, and they want to go and see their favourite bands. And they want to be introduced to something different, but not on the main stage. They want to be exposed to new music, but on the smaller stages, not on the big stage. I mean, that's all that this is about. And yet she's implying that somehow that there's racism there. And Lily Henry is as well, by bringing this up, I think. Glastonbury takes place next week at Worthy Farm in Somerset, finally celebrating its 50th anniversary after being cancelled by the COVID lockdown, with Sir Paul McCartney, Billie Eilish and rapper Kendrick Lamar confirmed as headliners. So that they do have a rapper playing there, and they have a huge rock star playing there, Sir Paul McCartney, and they have a new pop star playing there, Billie Eilish. But alongside that, there will be dozens of other small bands, and I'm sure that world music will be represented on the smaller stages. It's interesting that Glastonbury has now become this centre of hedonism and is linked with paganism, when it used to be the most central Christian place that we had in Britain. It was the origins of the first Christian church above ground. It was supposedly also the burial place of Joseph of Arimathea. It has a massive Christian legacy. And yet now it's become a centre of hedonism. But that's another story, which we have got into elsewhere on the Radio Albion site. If you want to learn about Glastonbury and Glastonbury history, we do have an audio book selection on Glastonbury. So Lenny Henry has enjoyed a varied career as a comic actor, author and co-founder of the successful Comic Relief charity series. But in recent years, the Dudley-born star has found a new calling as a social justice activist, championing BAMI rights in entertainment and media. Well, that's not very politically correct of them to still be using the term BAMI, is it? The government have suggested that we should be referring to people by their specific ethnicity rather than grouping them all together as BAMI. But I guess what other word are you going to use when you're just trying to describe non-whites altogether? In his widely praised 2014 BAFTA television lecture in London, Sir Lenny called for new legislation to reverse what he called the appalling percentage of black and Asian people in the creative industries, which he said has deteriorated badly. He cited statistics showing that the number of BAMI people working in the British television industry had fallen by a staggering 30.9% between 2006 and 2012. I also love increased monitoring, as that's how I can tell you the stats and figures that reveal that since my last speech in 2008, despite all those mentoring and training programs, despite these easy to roll out solutions, the fact is this situation has deteriorated badly, Sir Lenny said. So even though that they brought out this monitoring and this encouraging of it and encouraging of diversity, it didn't work out, because once these people had been hired, they didn't turn out to be that good at what they were actually doing, and then they got dropped. And that is the problem with diversity quotas. You end up with people that aren't very good at the job because they've only been employed because they have a diversity quotient, because they fill the diversity quota. Between 2006 and 2012, the number of BAMIs working in the UK TV industry has declined by 30.9%. Creative Skill Set conducted a census that shows quite clearly that black, Asian and minority ethnic representation in the creative industries in 2012 was just 5.4%, its lowest point since they started taking the census. Well, that's interesting as well, because the black population is just 3% of Britain. So if you're actually just talking about black people, then actually that's higher. But I guess what he's saying here is black, Asian and minority ethnic representation. So that is smaller. But when they did a look at that recently, they have shown that in actual fact, there is far more representation than there should be for the actual percentage of the population. He continues, that's an appalling percentage, more so because the majority of our industry is still based in and around London, right here where there's a BAMI population of 40%. And of course, this is where the view gets skewed, because he's thinking that it should represent what he sees around him in London, when really it should represent what is there in the whole country. And if you were to look at Wales, Wales is 96% white, 4% non-white, so that would be just about right for Wales, probably just about right for Scotland. But because he's used to looking around London, his view is that it should be more like 40% or half and half, basically, half white and half black. He continued, since 2008, I've noticed another worrying trend. Our most talented BAMI actors are increasingly frustrated and they have to go to America to succeed. This kind of exodus has been happening for a while. And that's not just for black and minority ethnic people, is it? I mean, that's always been the way. People in Britain, actors in Britain, they make it in British television. And once they start to get a bit of a following, they get noticed in America. And if they're lucky, then they get a role in America and they get a role in the movies, or they get a role in a bigger TV series. I mean, Britain is a much smaller market than America. I mean, this exodus that Lenny Henry is talking about here, as if it's a dreadful thing, our most talented black actors end up going to America to succeed. That's not really the case. They end up going to America because they have success. That's why they get headhunted and go off to America. I mean, you can look at it with white actors as well. Quite a few white actors have started out in Britain and then they've gone off to America where they've had great success over there, or perhaps a lesser success. But it's not a racial thing. It's just something that happens. It's just because the market is bigger in America. He says, I'm going to read an excerpt from a letter now. It refers to the lack of opportunity and prejudice towards minority actors in Britain and the impetus to go where one is wanted, as opposed to the alternative. Well, why would you not want to go where you're wanted? Why would you want to stay somewhere that you were not wanted? But that's not really the point here. Quoting from his letter, he says, talking of America, it was 50 years ago that Martin Luther King Jr. made a speech about how America needed to keep to the promise that it made in the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, a promise that America was breaking at the time. In that speech, Martin Luther King had a dream. He dreamt that one day America would fulfill its promise. He dreamt that sons of former slaves and slave owners would sit around a table together. He dreamt that his children would be judged not by the colour of their skin, but by their character. That black boys and black girls would join hands with white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. You all know the speech. I don't need to go on. It was his way of holding America to account. Well, that's not what's going on today, is it? People are not being judged by the content of their character. We're being encouraged to have diversity quotas. Yesterday, we talked about the Wales Anti-Racist Action Plan, which is basically introducing diversity quotas and seeking to ensure that 20% of all the people that are employed by the Wales government are non-white, even though they only make up 4% of the population. That's not employing people because of the content of their character. That's employing people because of the colour of their skin, because of what race they are. And it's the same with the BBC. Lenny Henry has asked for diversity quotas and said that more non-whites have to be employed by the BBC for the BBC to show that it is not racist. But again, that's going against this speech by Martin Luther King Jr. about people being judged by their character. To be judged by your character is meritocratic. It means that you're being judged by what you're able to do, who you are, rather than what you are. Whereas everything that's being asked for now is for people to be judged by what they are rather than who they are. It's quite nonsensical to be bringing this up and saying that this is what you want to happen when you're actually advocating for the opposite. In the years since, Sir Lenny has called on broadcasters in Hollywood to do more to tackle racial inequality in show business. So he's asking for diversity quotas, yet he's saying he wants people to be judged by their character. Speaking to the Sunday People in 2016, he said of the Oscars were ridiculous. The only brown person nominated was the bear in Leo DiCaprio's film, The Revenant. And he said of fellow black star Will Smith, if a movie makes more than $100, some black people stop being black. They become Will Smith. And of course, Will Smith was at the Oscars this year, and he ended up getting into a bit of a fight with the presenter. In April this year, Sir Lenny blasted the BBC's apparent lack of racial diversity, singling out the corporation's news operation for particular criticism. Speaking at a media event, he said, "When I look over the newsroom and all the people there that make the news, there's very few that look like me. And every film set you walk onto, there's Dave, Pete, Charlie, Terry. There are not many Raheems. That needs to change too." Well, why might it be that when you go into a newsroom, you don't tend to see many black people there? Could it be because black people don't really want to be newsreaders? Could it be because they don't, it's not really something that they're particularly good at? And if you look at the average black IQ, they have an IQ between 70 and 80, and some of them have difficulty at reading. Now, that doesn't mean all of them are going to have difficulty at reading or all of them have that average IQ, but it does mean that there will be less of them that have a high enough IQ to be able to be a newsreader. And if they do have that high IQ, rather than being a newsreader, they might want to become a doctor, or they might become a lawyer or something like that. It means that there's going to be less people, less black people with a high IQ to go around. That's probably more likely to be the reason why Lenny Henry doesn't see many black newsreaders, rather than the BBC discriminating against black people. In an op-ed for the Mirror last year, Sir Lenny also hit out at the use of the word diversity, arguing that it should be replaced with fairness. Both of those words have completely different meanings, though. He wrote, "Despite women making up roughly half of all film students, they make up only 13% of working film directors." Well, again, that may be because they're not particularly interested in being directors. Maybe they're more interested in being actresses. I dare say that women make up half of all the actors in the industry, but they make up less of the film directors. And that may be because they're not very good at directing people. Maybe that's not something that most women are particularly good at. Maybe they're better at other things. It's not that people are discriminated against women, I don't think. According to the Reuters Institute, only about 0.2% of British journalists are black. Well, again, that ties in with what I said about the lower average IQ, and some of them have difficulty with reading. So there's going to be less of them that are going to be able to do a really good job of being a journalist. They're going to be more likely to be better at doing other sorts of jobs. And it's not because they want to be a journalist and somebody's holding them back. They don't want to be a journalist. Most of them don't want to be a journalist because it's not something that they naturally find easy to do. Clive Myrie, who presents Mastermind now, I dare say he finds it quite easy to do. He finds it interesting. It's something he's interested in. And if you were to ask Clive Myrie, I'm sure he would say that most of the people he knows in his community would not be interested in being a journalist. They would far rather be doing other sorts of job. It's not a typical thing that black people would be interested in doing. Only 0.3% of the total film workforce are disabled. Well, that's probably because if you're disabled, it's very difficult to do physical work. It's difficult to work. That's why people are disabled. I don't think it's because people are discriminating against the disabled. He says, "And British media isn't the only sector with a problem. Less than 1% of British politicians identify as disabled." Again, that's because it's very difficult to work when you are disabled. When it comes to the legal profession, 71% of senior judges were privately educated, despite only 7% of the public attending private school. Again, people who go to private education, their parents have paid for that because they want them to get the very best education. And if they can afford to get to pay for the very best education, then that means that they themselves have got a good job and they've got a high intelligence. And if they have a high intelligence, that's going to be passed on. That's something that is hereditary. So you would imagine that senior judges and high-flying people like that, you would imagine that their descendants also have high-flying jobs and their grandchildren as well, because that sort of thing is passed on. It's inherited. It's not because people are discriminating against people that didn't go to private school. He says, "In company boardrooms, women are still massively underrepresented, and in academia and universities, less than 1% of professors are black." Well, again, that is what would be predicted when you look at the average IQ of black people. And it's very easy to do. All you have to do is go on Google, look up the world IQ, and it tells you the average IQ of the various parts of the world. And you can look at Africa. If you think, oh, well, that's just talking about the country, then you can get IQ results for African Americans. You can get IQ results for the Chinese. It's not as if white people have got the highest IQ. If you look at the results, you'll see that Chinese have certain groups of Chinese have a higher IQ than Europeans. Jews, Ashkenazi Jews have a higher IQ than Europeans. And all of these things predict the sort of jobs that they do. And you look at China, all the computer technology is being manufactured out there. That's because they have this high IQ. It's not because people are discriminating against all these black professors out there that just can't get work. The fact of the matter is that there aren't that many black people with the qualifications to become professors. That's the reason for this. It's not discrimination. He says, we experience their reality almost every day. We feel them. And that is why I don't like the word diversity. Diversity can often be too easily dismissed as reverse racism or giving women special treatment or trying to promote some kind of underrepresented minority group. And that is really what he's trying to do when he encourages diversity quotas and says that people need to employ more non-whites and we'll have to monitor all of this. And what Martin Luther King was saying is that people should be judged on the content of their character. And I'm not particularly enamored of Martin Luther King, but he does get quoted a lot by people that are promoting diversity quotas. And it just seems a bit of an inconsistency to me. Anyway, we've probably gone a little bit over time here. I just thought it would be interesting to look at some of these issues that Lenny Henry raises here, particularly the fact that Glastonbury is 99% white and the fact that this shows that there are differences between the races. I mean, even these other instances that he has picked up on here about the percentage of professors who are black. And that, again, I would suggest that that shows that there are innate differences between the races rather than the people that hire professors are just being racist and are not giving the jobs to the black professors. And we have lots of unemployed black professors out there. I mean, that doesn't really seem to be very realistic to me. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.